This video is sponsored by Brilliant. The first 200 to use the link in the description get 20% off the annual subscription. Mark Zuckerberg, CEO of Facebook and dear friend to 100 million real human people, has an announcement. First, just a reminder, this is a good company. We do good things here, like providing a public space to share news and information. But did you know, sometimes people also like talking in private. Weird, but we're here to serve you. If the world wants more private messaging, Facebook will provide it. Doing this is not easy, by the way. We're making huge sacrifices over here. And sure, we're not perfect. We've still got lots of work to do, so don't blame us when we inevitably mess this up. And don't expect any real, tangible changes anytime soon. Now, if you're like me, you saw this headline, yawned, chuckled, rolled your eyes, and got back to watching a robot drive a robot across the desert in silence. But I think that's a mistake. The first part, I mean. Right now, three of the biggest companies on Earth, Facebook, Google, and Apple, are telling vastly different, conflicting stories about your privacy. So who can you really trust? Marketing 101. Every company is telling a story. About who you are, who you should be, and more specifically, why 40 pounds of dehydrated marshmallows, which double as a soft pillow-filling material, will help you become that person. Some stories are subtle, others not, and some can coexist. Everyone loves a good Apple versus Google headline, but the truth is, on the whole, the two have probably been more symbiotic than competitive. One sells advertisements, and the other screens through which to see them, disproportionately bought by an advertiser's favorite demographic, young people with disposable income. Although this is kind of just an accident. A few years ago, Apple made it really easy to block ads on your iPhone, which for them is a nice but not really earth-shattering feature. For Google and the rest of the advertising industry, it was, less than ideal. I guess the lesson is, don't let 75% of your revenue come from a company with totally opposite priorities. The human was just crossing the street, but that's the end of the world for the ant. Today, the only difference is that each company is much more actively trying to step on the other, with their mutually exclusive stories about collecting your data. First, Google embraces it, arguing that you shouldn't just tolerate their using your data, you should want it. One, because giving your phone more information makes it more useful. Your phone is your secretary, and the more it knows about you, the more it can do for you. It's easy to say you value your privacy. People overwhelmingly do. But then, in practice, do you really care that Google can read your email if it means you can tell your phone to book a car, and because it already knows when and where, it automatically does it for you? People have certainly sold their data for a lot less. And two, because all this data, in aggregate, makes these services better, cheaper, and more accessible to, say, people in poverty. Critics argue these tools aren't really free, you just pay with data instead of dollars. Well, says Google, if data has value, then donating it is charity. Let Google see your photos, and Translate gets better at reading text, which helps disadvantaged people navigate the world. Really, you're a hero. Everything from Gmail to Chrome, Photos, Drive, and Translate relies on collecting your data, and thus convincing people of one or both of these stories. Apple, meanwhile, rejects the whole concept. Tim Cook argues that's a fake trade-off designed to justify a business model where you are the product, not the customer. Not only does your iPhone not need your data to be useful, it says, it doesn't even want it. For Apple, storing your information is only a liability. Now, whether you buy that logic or not, you have to stop and admire its genius. Because if Google says your data is what allows it to sell cheaper products, then Apple can argue its higher prices are a feature. You should feel good paying more for an iPhone, because it's proof Apple doesn't need to sell you out to advertisers. On the other hand, this argument is also harder to explain. While Tim is busy waxing poetic about privacy, Google just points to the price tag. Everyone wants to save money. And finally, Facebook denies it. The future is private, it says, so while the old website emphasized the newsfeed, an open public place to talk, the town square is becoming more like a living room. Now, with the redesign, it's all about private groups and communities. Notice by private, it means exclusive or separate, not necessarily your data stays between you and your device, or you and the receiver. In other words, it gets to capitalize on the buzzword, like cloud, AI, or blockchain before it, without having to make any significant changes. Google also announced something new. The idea is that, say you're typing a new acronym, instead of sending that data to Google's servers to determine whether it's a new word to add to its dictionary, or just a typo, your phone itself computes that locally. This way, your phone can make use of your data without Google, the company, being able to see it. It's similar to Apple's differential privacy, with just as bad a name. It's interesting because, A, unrelated to all this, phones are getting so good that people don't feel the need to upgrade so often. Using the A12 chip on the iPhone XS to send Snapchats is kind of like using a Ford Super Duty to haul your child's teddy bear. But when more work is being done on device rather than in the cloud, all that power is suddenly useful. And B, if Google can have its cake and eat it too, give you both privacy and a better product, then Apple just looks more expensive. That's why these companies are so enthusiastic all of a sudden about privacy. No one forced their hand so much as gave them an opportunity. The priorities of a growing company like Facebook in 2010, when it got caught sharing your private information, are very different from those of an established dominant one like Facebook today. A growing company is much more willing to move fast and break things, because that's what it takes. It's easy to do a bad thing, get big by doing it, and then say, look at us, aren't we cool for not doing that bad thing anymore? See Uber. It may be strategically smarter to fix a problem later than do the right thing all along. Facebook got where it is today by eating up your data, but now it's an open question whether it really needs it anymore. Even if every Facebook message were encrypted tomorrow, it would still be able to show you relevant ads. How? Because they had years to train those algorithms with the data they now so courageously encrypt. So they get PR points for doing what they would have done anyway. Try to draw back the kids these days who've left in favor of Instagram, Discord, and Snapchat. Facebook and Google have the same basic business model, selling tailored advertising. The difference is, the latter provides way more value, so it can afford to be much more honest about the trade. So am I saying don't trust Facebook? Yes. Not because Mark Zuckerberg is evil, more like detached from reality. Now, don't get me wrong, sometimes I like my CEOs detached from reality. It's just that someone sober needs to trip sit so things don't get out of control. Usually, we call that a board of directors, but when the CEO has the power to appoint and fire board members, well, that kind of defeats the purpose. The problem is, Facebook has three kinds of shares. Class A, which are so generously offered for purchase to you and me, come with one vote each. Class B, 10 votes. And Class C come with no voting rights. Can you guess which kind Mark gives to charity? So even though on paper, Zuckerberg only owns about 28% of shares, he has about 53.3% of all the voting power, granting him majority control. Because of this, Facebook's board of directors has about as much power as North Korea's parliament. Zuckerberg will be voted out right after Kim Jong-un loses an election. Okay, so what about Apple? Does it really care about your privacy? Personally, I hope not. Much better, the reason they build secure, private products is that they're financially incentivized to. Good, caring, trustworthy people retire, get fired, and pass away, but incentives I can trust. People who proclaim Apple just wants your money are missing the point. Who knows what Apple's true motivations are, whatever that means. But also, who cares? Zuckerberg once said, "I think it's important that we don't all get Stockholm syndrome and let the companies that work hard to charge you more convince you that they actually care more about you." And I agree, billion-dollar companies tend to be kinda single-minded. So follow the business model. The only thing you should trust is that a company will try to do what's in its best financial interest. So make sure theirs is at least kinda aligned with yours. Whenever there's a big hack, Tim Cook will predictably do a few interviews about privacy, trying to convince you that Apple's interests are most aligned with yours. With every update, Google will try to do the same, by giving you more features and more value in exchange for your data. And Facebook will keep apologizing. Now, it's just a question of whose story you buy. The surprising thing about Facebook is that it doesn't really need that much information to know who you are. As the probability lesson on Brilliant.org explains, a little bit of data has a lot of predictive power. For example, Facebook sees you're visiting its website from Berkeley, California, a city of 122,000 people, but you also joined an expecting mother's Facebook group and recently traveled to Vancouver. There are lots of pregnant Californians and many people recently visited Vancouver, but together the overlap is just small enough to guess who exactly you are. Brilliant teaches you the math, science, and computer science behind technology like this, in interactive lessons and short, easily digestible daily challenges. You can use the link in the description to start learning for free, and the first 200 people to subscribe will get 20% off the annual premium subscription, so you can view all the daily challenges in the archives and unlock dozens of problem-solving courses. Thanks again to Brilliant, and to you for watching this video.